This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Lisa Shields. She's a love coach and heart-opening expert, and I want to welcome you to the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Phantom. Thank you for having me.
Want to let people know we are a featured podcast on the Newsly platform. You can see that icon up there. It says Newsly. People can check that out for free for 30 days if they use coupon code GHOST. And we also have your website, www.lisashield.com. That will be fully clickable when we're published on all major platforms. And then what we're going to talk about today, one of the focus points is finding the guardian of your soul. And we'll get into what that means. But one of the first questions I always ask guests is basically, why do you do what you do and what motivates you?
Oh, that's a big question to out of the starting gate, Phantom. I think that I solved a problem that is a universal problem, or at least, you know, there's millions of people who are suffering in a similar way to the way I was suffering in my love life. And having gone from having a terrible relationships to finding the guardian of my soul, something that I, many times along the journey, I thought was impossible, I felt compelled to help other people do this. And when I started, when I became a love coach, there were no coaches. There weren't people doing this work. And so that's why I felt compelled to do it. Internet dating was brand new, and there was nobody to guide me through this process. There were all kinds of self-help gurus and therapists and all, but there was nobody really helping people date and find real love. And so that's what compelled me.
So it's your own personal experience. A lot of times I find like with people who are creative or have services that, you know, that's usually some kind of crucible moment in their life. And they learn, have a lessons or multiple lessons learned. And then they feel like they want to be teachers and help other people and kind of, you know, pass it along. And it makes them feel, you know, like they self-actualized that they're able to, you know, solve their own issues and then help other people through the same type of issue or traumas or, you know, advice just to get people, you know, aware of what you learned.
Yeah. And I think I'm a little, you know, I'm a little more practical. I just feel that this is such a solvable problem. And if I can help even one woman get this solved, that's a wonderful accomplishment. And the fact that I've grown my business to where it is today, and we've helped, you know, many, many hundreds of women find guardians of their souls. That was something I never expected. So I just felt like, hey, I got a solution. You got a problem. Let me help you.
Maybe you can define what's your definition of guardian of the soul? Because that's a unique term. I haven't heard that. And I'd like to understand, like, what does it actually mean?
Well, you know, many people say they're looking for a soulmate or a twin flame or whatever. And those are nouns. Those are things that they're searching for. And a guardian of your soul is really a verb. This is a person who sees more of you than you see of yourself and who sees what your soul's journey is. What is Phantom soul longing to be in this lifetime, right? And then if I were your partner, I would do everything in my power to support you, to support your soul in actualizing its purpose in this life. So if you needed to create a podcast and this was your dream and I was your partner, I would do everything in my power to love and support you and encourage you to do this thing that you're driven to do. So like that, we support each other. For example, my husband, he is a body worker. He does manual therapy. And he also helps me in my business, but his first love and his primary career is that. And he's going now to Kauai for a week to teach. And he spent many hours studying to be able to do that. And I give him the space that he needs. And I encourage him to go and do that because I know it's his soul. It's his soul's journey to teach and to travel.
That's interesting because I think a lot of times when you hear about relationships, you're like, I don't know when you have a lot of people in relationships if they actually are doing what you're saying. Because a lot of people, you know, don't seem to, you know, be in that mindset that you just described of supporting their loved ones' ambitions. They might feel like, well, they should be supporting them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and then there's like, there's not the reciprocation or the kind of, you know, empathy or understanding that it's like a two-way street that you're describing. I think sometimes people might have like this idealized vision of what their soulmate should be. And there seems to be a misalignment.
Well, I agree with you and I'm guilty as charged. I've been in relationships like that myself, where I was trying to get my partner to be who I needed him to be for me and not who he needed to be for himself in a lot of ways. And so it takes two people who are guardians of each other's souls to really make this work, Phantom. It's not something that one person can do in a vacuum. I couldn't just be here generously encouraging you and your dreams, right? Mm-hmm. It has to go both ways. But I realized that unconditional love doesn't have an agenda. It's not about itself. It's about encouraging another person, loving another person for who he is, and allowing another person to love and accept and see me for who I am. Most people don't do this, but this is what we're teaching our clients and what our clients, many of them, do achieve.
It seems like today's society, it's rather difficult to date because there's a lot of new paradigms. You have all these dating apps, you have all this social media. And I'm wondering, like, it's a help, but is it a hindrance? Because there's a lot of like these tools sometimes present like a face or a mask that is not actually the person. And so then if you actually are getting this image that's not really them, or it's like the best of them, it's not really the vulnerabilities, it's not all the stuff that you actually physically meet and you start to actually talk to somebody face to face without the filter. Does it cause issues because of these filters that we're using, that people get disappointed because they're not, it's never going to match the filter?
So there's a lot of ways to answer that question. And I feel that many people are operating in that paradigm that you just described. So there are many people who come at online dating from that angle. But as we know, there's many, many different ways in which to approach something. And so we really do get our clients outside of that conversation that you just presented. And what we do is in the first 6 weeks of working with me, my program is 6 months, but in the initial 6 weeks, Phantom, what we do is we really have the woman look at herself, her choices, who she's being, how she's been showing up, where she's being inauthentic, right? And as you know, like attracts like, or we could even say water seeks its own level. And so as the women start learning the skills that I teach them in my program, it is a complete paradigm shift for them. And also we get them to get beautiful. I was a professional photographer for years. And so I guide them to get amazing photographs, not pose, not fake. We work with a very specific kind of photographer So they get very beautiful, natural, real photos. They don't wear a lot of hair and makeup and whatever. And we also have them mix those photos with some of their own snapshots. And then my husband writes the online dating profiles for the women. And that's a game changer. You know, there's a difference between just an average blog post and reading Ernest Hemingway, right? Certain people have a way of language. And I don't know if you're familiar, having done as many podcast episodes as you told me you've done, I would almost guess that you've had an NLP expert or something on the show. If you haven't.
Yeah, we've had people like that.
Yeah. So NLP is really partly the study of language and how to language things and how you can say things in a certain way to be able to get a certain response. And my husband writes these profiles that make men cry when they read them. They're like, oh my God, I have never read anything like this. In fact, you're putting the link to my my website. There is a tab there, Perfect Profiles, and there is a sample profile from Benjamin. And when you read these profiles, you're like, oh my God, I would date her. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. This is everything a man wants to hear. And but the women back it up because we teach them about men, how to talk to men, how to bring out the best in a man. And so it's not like we're just luring men into this trap with these beautiful photos and profiles, but they definitely make a difference online in the quality of the men that our women are engaging with.
Well, it's interesting that you're triggering like a human response rather than just like the typical response, you know, is not crying. You know, that's not what I've heard most people, and I've talked to people with dating sites, and that's the first time I've ever heard somebody that actually would invoke that kind of emotional response. And that feels like authentic. You know, as an artist, I'm a producer. I try to get at the heartstrings, right? I don't like people who clone other artists. I want to hear your authentic, vulnerable self, because I think that's what you have to offer rather than trying to copy somebody that's already out there. And so I think if you can have an authentic response, people feel it's honest. And so I think like what you're saying is like, if you bring out emotions and you have somebody that feels like they're going to cry, they really want to know, it brings out that like something that's really tangible in terms of feeling, and it doesn't feel like fake. So I think that's the honesty that people are looking for. And maybe that's the type of angle that maybe some people don't approach it that way. And so you can talk more about like how you came about with this type of approach versus like, is it lesson learned over time to come up with the way you're doing it now?
Well, I've done a lot of just interpersonal work on myself coming into dating and finding my husband. And when I was doing all this work, I got my master's in spiritual psychology. I was a student of Don Miguel Ruiz. He wrote The Four Agreements. I went to a 12-step program. I did Landmark Forum. I did all kinds of things to really learn about the inner workings of the human heart and spiritual psychology. And the one thing that I just couldn't find, and you're really pointing to this, Phantom, is the authenticity that I was longing for in my connections with men. And there was nobody who even could model that for me. There was nobody I could look to as a role model, certainly not my own parents, but I never saw an example of a relationship that came close to what I knew was possible. And so I decided to kind of go out into this. At the time, it was brand new. Online dating was really new 5 years ago now when I posted my first profile. And I just didn't listen to other people. I didn't listen to other people's negative stories about men and dating and online dating. And, you know, people used to say to me, oh, the kind of guy I would be looking for would never be online. You know, like, how arrogant does that sound, right? And I was getting my master's, and this is a funny story. A lot of the people in my program said that to me. And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not meeting men any other way. You know, I can get as many dates as I want online. I'm going to give it a try. And the funniest thing of all is that my husband wrote one of the books that we read when I was getting my spiritual psych master's. And so one day I stood up and I said, look, I know a lot of you are saying, gosh, you know, the kind of guy I would want to meet would never be online. And I said, I just want you to know that one of the authors of one of the books that we read in this class was dating online, and now we're in a relationship. So you may want to consider. But it's all your mindset, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a story you're telling yourself about an experience, and not ascribing to all the BS and the negative stories and the fear-based, you know, psychology that other people are bringing to, you know, to that experience.
Well, a lot of times it's like, you know, if you're a creative person, you kind of live in this zone where, you know, it's hard, you know, a lot of people don't take that step to put something against, you know, throw it against the wall, because mm-hmm. they're scared of the response. They're scared of the vulnerability of, like, oh, they're going to hate it. They're not going to like it. They, you know, they're scared to step on stage. They're scared to make that first step. And I think then you always like come up with a reason why you can't do something, because it's like impossible. So it's like, you know, you would never take a step if you think you can't, you know, I can't be Einstein. I can't be Beethoven. I can't be Bach. I can't. Yeah. They are, you know, you're not going to be them. You're going to be you. And there's nothing wrong with being you unless you feel there's something wrong with it. And then that's probably what you got to solve. Because I think that's like a lot of times when you step out there and you don't think you deserve it. Like if you don't think you deserve a decent relationship or find a person that understands you, male, female, whoever, then you're not going to find them. It's like the law of attraction. You're going to get negativity. You're not going to get what you want, because what you're radiating is like a bad vibration. So you're not going to connect.
It's true. It's very true. I don't know that I felt so confident, but what I did, Phantom, was I looked at dating like any other personal growth path. You know, you set out and you're one person when you start, and then you get to the end and you're like, wow, that was an incredible experience. And I wouldn't be who I am today if I hadn't dated all those men. I went out with 95 men. My husband was my 96th first date. And I just said, look, I'm not very good at this. I think I need some practice. And I had to learn how to be comfortable around men. You know, most people, like most men, really aren't comfortable with women. Yeah. And most women aren't comfortable with men. We need alcohol, or, you know, we need to go to a bar or a club or something, you know, to get us out of space and time and make us feel like we're connecting. But to be honest with you, I didn't plan it this way, but I wound up dating sober. And talk about keeping it real.
That's real. That's a hard thing, because most people probably don't do it. Like if you talk to your grandparents and your parents and your uncles, most of them, they probably didn't do that. You know, because like the society, like I was a sociology major, and the society norms are like socialization is usually, you know, lubricated with alcohol or other things.
Right.
And people don't come into it with a straight edge, because it's hard. It's that vulnerability. It's hard to be that honest. You know, the interesting thing I found as a creative person, like I found my wife because I did poetry slams. I would go and read poetry. I would go show up, and I was like Mount Holyoke, and I was doing something, and we ended up working on a play. She was a playwright, and I work on music, so I did the music for the play, and it was just like we were just working together, and it kind of synced that we had the same thing. And I wasn't planning on a date or anything. We were just working, and we had the same mindset, the same kind of creative thing. And sometimes it just happens, and it wasn't like this alcohol fuel thing. It was just this kind of thing that happened, and it's like the one chance, you know. And I hadn't been very successful dating either, you know, at all. And it just happened when I was 27. It's like I would not know that it was going to happen that day. It just happened, you know. And sometimes that's, you know, it's hard to plan.
It is. It's hard, but it sounds like it all worked out well for you. How long have you been together?
We've been together since 1997.
So a long time.
We have a 23-year-old daughter, and you know, we live in New Hampshire, and you know, it's like I would never expect what happened, but you know, we've been together, and it's been great. And you know, up to that point, I was not very successful. I was kind of down on myself. I didn't know what to do, but you know, in my life, I had gone through cancer. So 2 years before, I survived cancer, and I really think it was my mindset that I started to go out and do more things with my creativity. I'm a software designer, but I started showing up at doing play, you know, working on plays, working at you know, poetry slams, doing performances. And because I started to get more confident, I started to meet people that I really wanted to meet that were creative type of people. And I found that that's where my wife's a playwright. She's a writer, and you know, I'm a musician. So we kind of aligned with that creative kind of thing. And it's like, that's what happened. It's like, I had the confidence to finally start showing my work. And then I met her, you know.
That's beautiful. I love that. I love that. And you know, at 27, it's so different. You know, it's a different age, having come through cancer and all. I'm sure you grew up quite quickly, you know, as a result of that experience. And you figured out what mattered in life. I'm projecting or guessing, but I think, you know, and yeah. And I think it's so important for everyone to know that not everybody's a player. Not every, you know, not all guys love the chase. And, you know, I mean, there are wonderful men out there who do not love the chase and want to keep it real and want to have a wonderful partnership, you know, at any age. So my hat is off to you.
Well, I think the thing is, a lot of men are kind of taught to be players.
Yeah.
They're taught that that's the way to do it. You know, I was in college, I was in the frat, and I saw the frat behavior, and I see that frat behavior continue.
Yeah.
People like 50 years old still acting like they were when they were in, you know, 21. Right. And I'm like, why are you doing that? And it's kind of like a societal norm. It's like, well, that's how you meet women. That's how you, that's the way you're supposed to behave. And it's really hard to go against the river, you know, because like a lot of men are just reinforced the bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, it's hard to go against that, because then you'll get put down. But being an artist, I didn't care about getting put down. Because you tend to, you know, you're kind of on the other side of the bell curve. But if you're one of these people who wants to go along to get along, I think you're going to have a harder time.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to be part of the club, then you'll be less likely to do the hard things.
Well, and that's human nature, right? To want to fit in and to think if that's what everybody says works, then it must work. And that's how you're supposed to do it. But it's not, you know, and it isn't working. And look at the divorce rates. Look at the number of single adult Americans today. So that behavior isn't working.
Yeah, it's really funny when people think of like, well, that's the way you're supposed to behave, but does it work? And it's like logically, you know, I'm a software guy, so I just think logically, zeros and ones, you know, algebra, you know, that equation's not working. But you keep on doing the same thing. Like if in my job, if I did that, I'd be fired. You know, I can't do that. So you have to start to think, like, you know, logic is hard because there's a lot of emotion. And sometimes people don't think about the thing that's readily apparent because it's too hard. It's too hard to take on the thing that's really clear. If something's not working, it's not working. But you kind of delude yourself into it. It is working. And then you wonder why you get the same result.
Totally. What very well said. Very well said. And like you said earlier, it's hard to go against the grain and do it differently. And that's what we do in my program, Phantom. It's so against the grain. In fact, you know, a little more than an hour ago, I was telling the women on a live Q&A call, I was saying, make friends in the course, because the stuff we're teaching you, nobody is going to, none of your friends and your family will understand, because it's so against the grain.
Yeah. That's always the hard thing in life, is when you're out there on the bleeding edge, you tend to get hit. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of the example, I'm into music, and I always give examples, but like Bob Dylan, when he went electric, right? He was in London, he was in the Newport Jazz Festival, and people just went crazy saying it, like, you're terrible. They just came down on, and one
Didn't
thing
they that boo I, him? They booed
yeah,
him.
Yeah, they booed him. And then I have a tape where Bob's response was, I don't believe you. And I'm like, I thought that was awesome, because as an artist, to be in front of the crowd that's telling him he's terrible, he goes and says, I don't believe you. And he continued his set the way he was doing it. And the thing that was interesting, the crowd didn't like it, but the critics liked it. So a lot of rock critics said it was brilliant. And so then, because he stuck to his guns, he still got there. He was on the bleeding edge. He was on this thing where all the people were saying it was terrible. He could have just gave up. But that was like the big moment where he kind of shifted and became like a pop star, from a folk star to a pop star. And it happened because he stuck to his guns. Mm-hmm. And he was on the edge. And that's a hard place to be. And you're like, a lot of people can't stand that light. They can't stand the heat. They can't figure out how to do it.
Yeah. Joni Mitchell said, using another musical reference, she said, they crucify you for changing and they crucify you for staying the same. So I'd rather be crucified for changing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing as an artist, because you do have to shift. And, you know, like your 17-year-old version of yourself isn't going to be the 25 or the 35 or the 45.
Right.
Your fans might always want you to be the 19-year-old version of yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of come to terms with, like, do I want to satisfy that to some level, or do I want to be who I am?
That's why I'm listening to all the Billie Eilish I can listen to right now. Because she's not going to be this age and this good forever. Or maybe she will. Who knows? I don't think so.
Yeah, you always shift. Like, there's a period where you have your pinnacle moment.
Right.
Where you're synced with your fans, and then you get out of sync with your fans, but then you're like, you're true to yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So your fans will like this, like a snapshot of who you are. And the thing is, in life, that's the way, like, your high school buddies like have a vision of who you are when you're in high school, but like who you are when you're 25 or 35, it's not the same person. But you could try to pretend. And then that causes a lot of trouble.
Well, and some of your high school friends never grow up. And then there's that.
Yeah. You can try to keep up with them and then find out, like, well, that doesn't work. Because you're not really there, you know? Yeah.
That's so funny.
But it's interesting, like, the relationship that you talk about with your husband. And like you mentioned that you was, like, what, number 96 or 99 or something. I forgot the number, but it's kind of this perseverance that you had to, like, you're trying something new. You want to figure out if it's going to work. And then it's like showing up. If you show up, then eventually things happen. Things, you know, like, if you could look at it as, like, some people look at things as failure. And I kind of look at things as like steps on their way to success.
Yeah.
So as an artist, I could have 99 demos that I worked on, and number 100 is the one that worked. I could say that all 90 9 failed, or that they were all steps on the way to the one that succeeded. It's kind of looking at it like how you look at it.
Yeah, that's how I saw it. I just figured every guy was teaching me something. I wasn't 100% sure what it was all every time, but I knew that every experience was getting me closer to where I needed to be. You know, you got to look at the life is about stepping stones, like you said.
So a lot of the common issues that people have you like identified like commonality, common issues that women have to overcome when you get to your course? Do you kind of give people like, these are like the 5 top 10 hindrances or obstacles that you have to kind of get over to get on this road?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of very common mistakes. There's a lot of blind spots that people have. And one huge mistake that people make is doing personal growth work, but not doing interpersonal growth work. So they go to therapy, they learn to love themselves and all, but they're just working on themselves, but they're not learning about men, about how to communicate with a man, how to make a man feel like a man. You know, they're not learning about this. They're just learning about this, right? And so that's a big mistake, because our course really is more focused on the intrapersonal skills rather than the interpersonal. And then so many women today, which they can't see because they're so busy being themselves and and just doing what they need to do, that they don't see how masculine they are. They're not feminine. They're turning men off left, right, and center. And you can be the most beautiful woman in the world, but if a man doesn't feel like there's a way in, if you're just this island and you're so self-contained, a man wouldn't know how to be a man with you, because you're being a man with you. So,
yeah, this seems, is that that's like a problem with the corporate world has kind of made, you know, women feel that they have to take on the more male part of their personality to be economically successful. And then they can't thread the needle in terms of, well, that's work. So does work have to also extend to your personal life, or can you kind of thread the needle and say, well, like at work, I have to have this face, but outside of work, I could be this other part of myself.
Well, and they look pretty, they dress pretty, they take care of themselves, but on the inside, they're men, you know, they're men in women's bodies. And Phantom, most of them don't even know that they're doing this. They're going on dates, they're meeting men, and they can't understand why the men that they really like are not pursuing them. You know, and they're very, a lot of them are too serious. They're not playful. They don't know how to have fun with a guy. We have those conversations all the time. Like, guys want to have fun with us. They do not want to sit around and process and solve the problems of the world 24/7. They'll do some of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's not how guys think. Men want to go out with a woman and they want to have a good time. They want to play. They want to, you know, and they want women who are also sexually confident. And that doesn't mean like a woman that'll go to bed with you right away within the first date or few dates. What that means is a woman who understands that, yes, men are sexually attracted to them and they're comfortable with that, just like they're attracted to certain men, but they're not intimidated. They don't get bent out of shape because a man makes a move, you know, and if they're not ready for that, they have the confidence to put up a boundary without making a man feel foolish or feel rejected. So a lot of women are so uptight when it comes to sexual advances from men. So those are all some of the things that we work on with our clients.
Is it like a societal trauma because of like bad experiences that have been kind of documented in the press and social media, mm-hmm. that like women have kind of put this kind of wall up and have forgotten to kind of like enact, you know, just like human behavior, like before all this, if you go back, you know, 50 years, 60 years, how did people react? You know, how did people meet each other without, you know, your iPhone, without your computer? You know, you had to physically meet, you had to learn how to, you know, do that dance, that human dance. And different cultures have different aspects to that, and different religions have different. So there's a lot of, there's still paradigms. You go, mm-hmm. you're still going to have these paradigms of your religion, your society, mm-hmm. your ethnicity. There's all kinds of levels that can cause, you know, bad communication. But yeah. Still, like, how do you like get, you know, into a space where you can actually communicate?
Well, we teach women, first of all, you don't, you know, we teach them what to look for in a partner, how to distinguish which men are good men and which men are players, right? And just looking to get them into bed and whatever. And so we help them really distinguish what they need to be looking for. And once they're dating good men, they need to, once they you know, meet good men, then it's being able to not go to a man's house too quickly, don't accept a dinner invitation, you know, don't bring a big old bottle of wine to his house. You know? There's all kinds of, when I dated, I never went to a man's house right away. I didn't put myself in those situations. And mm-hmm. I was confident enough to know that if a man wanted to get to know me and he really was serious about doing that, he would understand that I wasn't coming to his house right away. And that, you know, so you really have to make smart choices, and you have to be confident enough to know that some men are not going to want to continue dating you because you said you're not coming over for dinner after 3 dates. And it's also an error. Like, men just wouldn't do that with me. They don't do that. They didn't do that. Men, you know, the way I handle myself and the way I am, they, you know, I come across as a woman who's not down for that.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to like realize like the kind of club scene, party scene, mm-hmm. you know, bar scene is maybe not the best for a long-term relationship. If you know that you're gonna find a lot of players, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for the like instant gratification. It's gonna happen a lot quicker than something that. And one thing I always found is like when I was dating, I tended to have situations where I had a lot of women friends, mm-hmm. and my women friends, like, they couldn't see me as somebody they would date. As like I was their friend, and. Mm-hmm. They would always tell me about these guys that were like they really liked, but they were like jerks. Mm-hmm. And they would like say they wanted to pursue the guy that wanted to bring him to bed after 3 days, mm-hmm. but then they were talking to me for like the last 2 years, yeah, as a friend, and they never would see me in that way, and then they would always see this other person that way. And it was kind of interesting when I found my wife. I finally found somebody that kind of was a friend that became my wife. But mm-hmm. it seemed to be like that was like if you're friends too long, then you're not pursuable as a romantic interest. That's what I found. I don't know if that's just my experience, but I found that kind of situation.
Well, and you also allowed yourself to be friend zoned. You know, you put yourself in a position of being a woman's confidant and being her shoulder to lean on and all. But women really do want boundaries. We want that. We crave it. We don't want the players. Players have a false sense, you know, of being hard to get and a challenge because they're players. They're not interested in a relationship, right? So it's like the wolf that was jumping for the grapes and couldn't get them, you know, and they're just out of reach, but there's something about that. But you know, the guy that's too nice or too much of a girlfriend, he's not attractive either. And so there's got to be a boundary, you know, like my husband, he's got a very, very balanced masculine feminine side. But we took this test actually online. That's a very well-known, well-respected test. I wish I could think of the name of it right now. And it doesn't give you, you know, a 50-50 rating, like you're, you know, 25% masculine and 75% feminine, for example. The numbers are not correlated. Like you could have, they could add up to 150 or whatever, you know? So my husband took the test and he literally came out 78% masculine and 78% feminine, like equal.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But I think that the thing with Benjamin is he has boundaries. Like he knows himself as a man. He's kind and compassionate and he knows what I need from him and he's there for me. But he also will say, look, we're starting to process. If you want to process, go call a girlfriend. You know, we've already talked about this. So he's very definitive. So he's very masculine, but he's also very kind and compassionate. So you still have to have an edge and you have to have boundaries with women or they won't find you attractive sexually.
Yeah, I learned that.
That was cute.
But yeah, it was frustrating. You know, I was like in my 20s, but I figured
it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible. You know, it's like an itch that you can't scratch. Like, you know, you think that you're doing everything right by being a good man. You're there for somebody, you know, and you keep telling yourself, eventually she's going to see that I'm the better man here, but they just keep going for the germs.
Yeah. I figured that out. But yeah, it's interesting because so when you run into people, and I guess women who you know, maybe are going after the wrong type of guy, right? And then expecting a better result from a player. Like they want to turn the player into a long-term husband and he's really not going to do that. And so the type of person they need to get in line with, aligned with, they haven't, you know, been looking there.
They don't wouldn't know that guy if he sat down in front of them, Phantom. They wouldn't know if a guy like you sat down in front of them, they wouldn't even know it. Because when you meet a truly secure man, if you've been chasing anxious or avoidant men, then a secure man will feel very boring in the beginning because he's not playing games. Yeah. He's real. He's interested. He's up front. And so there's no mystery. There's no whatever. You know, we had a woman on our call just earlier, and she had just gotten out of a relationship with a player, a guy that was never going to be beautiful woman, so elegant, so beautiful. You would look at her and you would think men would be lining up around the block for this woman. And she dated this jerk. And I got on a call with her maybe a month ago, and I said, cut it off. I said, you need to just end this. And I was very black and white about it. I wasn't, you know, I said, you need to get off this call and you need to end that. And she did. But listen to this. Now she comes on the call and she says, I met this man. We've been dating for 2 months. He's got all of my criteria. He seems completely interested and I'm not making time for him. plenty of time for the other guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the story I heard all the time.
She's married to death, and she knows this guy is right for her, but this is real. And she's scared.
I wonder, yeah, the vulnerability of it, like you get scared of what's real. Sometimes you lose the best shot ever because it's too honest. It's too, and it's like you think you might be willing to be vulnerable. You might think you're honest, but like if you like are going toward the fake person, the person that's not really gonna, you know, they got a lot of side women all over the place, and you think they're not gonna change, and somehow you think you're gonna change. Well, that's not changing. And it's like that's, you continue to go like law of attraction. If you get rid of one, you end up with another one. And then you might end up with the right one, but then it's like, well, they're in the friend zone and they're not attractive to you because like the problem is you keep on getting pulled into this, like, you know, law of attraction where you're getting pulled into the thing that actually hurts you. It's kind of like an addiction. Like you get pulled into the thing that's not good for you. And it's probably hard to break that. So is it kind of like addiction where people go toward the wrong source? You know, they go toward the person they think should be their soulmate, but they really aren't.
Yeah, because those guys are exciting. It's exciting to chase something that you can't have and to keep, you know, and then you get hooked into, well, why doesn't he like me? You know, you loop. What's going on? Why he calls me and he has me over and we have amazing sex. You know, he must be interested. Why isn't he, you know, and then you're totally hooked in this fantasy, this idea that, you know, he keeps calling me. He wants to spend time with me, but he doesn't call me his girlfriend. And he's not really, you know, and you're not realizing it's all on his schedule and his time. And then in between you're agonizing, but there's a lot of, emotional hook, you know, all these emotional hooks. And like you said, it's like, it's an addiction. And then you get together and you have sex and, you know, and, oh yes, he does like me. Right. And then you get your fix. And then the next day you're like, oh my God, why did I do that? You know, and you're right back where you were. When you meet a good guy, it's not like that. He calls you, he texts you, he shows up when he says he will. You have one date, he plans the next date, and there's no anxiety because you always know where he stands and where you stand. So suddenly, what do? Then you have to stop dealing with all this other stuff and you have to deal with what's real. This guy really likes me. Can I spend the rest of my life with him? Is this the person, you know, are we a good match? Can I get vulnerable and get emotionally naked and open up to him? So everything shifts.
Yeah, there's like a level of maturity. Like, I guess it doesn't depend. It doesn't matter what age you're at. But like because sometimes some people can find that at a certain younger age than you would ever imagine. And other people, it takes them a while to figure out, you know, that's actually what they were looking for. But right. It's kind of like, it's hard to judge. It's like sometimes experience doesn't actually dictate that you're going to make the right decision because your experience was that you were doing the wrong thing.
Well, and people can't see what they're doing wrong. And what they often do, Phantom, is they'll read a book and then they'll go, oh, okay, now I know what I'm doing wrong. Well, that may be one small piece of a much bigger puzzle, right? You could be doing many things wrong. And if you don't have a system that dots all the I's and crosses all the T's and is actually a real roadmap for how to get from one end to the other, you're always just going to be hit and miss and throwing mud at the wall, but nothing ever really changes. And so working with experts and coaches and people who can help you see your blind spots and people who have done this in their own lives, like when you go into a 12-step program, the first thing they want you to do is find a sponsor. And they tell you when you get a sponsor is to find somebody who has what you want. So the kind of recovery, the kind of life, the kind of, you know, whatever, and use that person as your role model, because the people who are most well-equipped to get you to that end goal are the people who you can model yourself after and follow in their footsteps. Most people will not figure this out on their own. You, if for you, it happened organically, and you were very fortunate because you seem, at least to me, to be a wonderful, kind man. And, you know, thank God a woman came along, and or it just organically happened that the two of you realized that there was love, that you spent time together and you saw each other. And, you know, I wish every romance would happen the way yours did. I really do. It's a beautiful love story.
Yeah, it's just so yeah, a lot of times, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, it didn't happen that way. You know, it was like the other way, like you meet them in the bar, you meet them here, there. But it's like, I don't know, it's just kind of a random event. But I kind of, you know, I'm a Buddhist, so I felt like it was kind of like there was like a plan. The universe had a plan for me, and I fit into the plan. But a lot of times there's a spirituality, there's like your mind, your body, your soul, your heart. And sometimes a lot of people just like focus on the mind, or they focus on something that's like, well, logical, and they forget about the spirituality, forget about the heart, they forget about the body. You can't just like, if you just work out without doing any mindset, well, you probably could have a problem. I had a guy that was a trainer, and he was all, you know, six pack abs and everything, but he even said for himself, he did not see himself that way. He actually did not see himself as the physique that he had. He actually still thought that it wasn't there. And so that was a big problem. We had a whole discussion where you could work on one part of that system, like one leg of it, and still not be okay. Because if you don't handle what's in your head or in your heart or your spirit, then you don't solve it.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, if I would add to that, is the thing that people miss about relationship and romantic relationships in particular, is that you can go on through your life thinking you're all that in a bag of chips, but then you get into a romantic relationship with somebody that you want to like you, who you really like, and you get to see, you know, am I really as evolved as I thought I was? If this is the person, you know, and so it's very different doing it in a, where you're getting in a feedback loop, or when you're just, you know, doing that personal growth work, and it's like, oh, I'm so evolved, and I'm so spiritual, and I'm so loving. And then you get into a relationship and it's like, oh, I'm so selfish. I have so much to learn.
There's a lot of work. Like, it never ends. It's like, a lot of people think it's like somehow you're going to find this magic bullet when you find your soulmate and everything's going to be perfect. Like, everything, every day you have to work. Every day you have to learn. Every day, like, you're not perfect. You make mistakes. You know, other people make mistakes. You make mistakes. Things happen. And it's like, it's not always like honey. It's not always honey. Sometimes you got to live. The reality of life is like, there's going to be vinegar. There's going to be like happy accidents. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be things that you have to go through, and it's going to be hard. And I think maybe some people are under the impression that somehow everything's going to get easier. It's like, it doesn't always get easier, but it's how you work together. That's the relationship. That's the whole thing, is like how you, both of you, the whole, or a family, the whole family works together. You know, you get a family. It's a multiple people having to learn how to get along and go forward.
Well, you want to know how my life got easier? I became easier on myself. You know, so do things happen? Absolutely, they do. You know, there's stuff that comes up. I mean, I run a program where I have over 100 women in my program right now, you know, and they all want to be successful at this, and some are happier and, you know, than others with, you know, I mean, there's just 100 different personalities. But where I would have taken everything to heart in the past, now I know I'm doing the best I can do for everybody. And if something doesn't go well, I don't sweat it like I used to. So that's how my life has become easier. I'm just easier. I take life, you know, more easily, and I'm easier when I make a mistake. I'm easier on myself, and I'm more forgiving of others.
It's kind of like you take it easy on yourself. It's like, it's kind of like an Eagles song, but like the idea to like not be so like the self-assessment is always like so crazy. You know, you end up being so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
There a lot of people are so hard on themselves that they're going to be in this failure loop because they've raised the bar beyond what they can actually do. Once you realize you can actually incrementally do things without having to be 0 to 100, then you can be less pressure on yourself, you know?
And that's where life has gotten easier. You know, it's just not taking things so seriously. I mean, there are things that have to be taken seriously, but there are other things that we really take far too seriously that don't really matter in the scheme of things. So, you know, learning how to let go, all of those Buddhist principles, surrendering, understanding that our best one day is not as good as another day.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what's made life easier for me.
After I got through cancer, I just saw things as like just waking up the next day. Mm-hmm. It's such a blessing. Like every day that you get to be in remission and you're able to live your life, it gives you a different mindset than somebody maybe didn't go through that. But you start to like, you know, look at things in a different lens. And so the things that used to be super big aren't so big because there are other things that are bigger than that. So you start to figure out the balance. And life is a lot of balance. It's like, you know, sometimes you go a little bit one way, a little bit the other way. And life is trying to kind of get into harmony. You know, being a musician is like a deal with like harmony. But a lot of songs have disharmony and dissonance and pieces of it. And it's part of the whole. And so a part of the whole piece is it's not all harmony. It could be silence. There could be disharmony. It could be distortion. But that's all part of it. And some people just want one thing. They want they're too much into the distortion, or too much into the dissonance, too much into the harmony, the middle. But it's all part of one thing. And
yeah, right. I love that. I love that. That's so cool. Yeah, it's true. And you just, you know, music is sometimes disharmonious, but like certain kinds of jazz, you know, but yeah. It works. And that's kind of like life. Like sometimes it's very melodic and everything's great. And, you know, yesterday I went and got the shingles vaccine, my second one. Mm-hmm. And a girlfriend of mine got shingles and she's got permanent nerve damage. So I was like, I'm picking that as a wake up call. I'm listening. And so I went and I got my second shot and I didn't realize it just hit me out of left field. You know, I had a really severe reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And I missed an appointment. And I just spaced it. I was literally at my computer waiting for the appointment. And then I looked up at the clock and I was like, oh my God. Oh,
you missed it. Yeah.
You know, and I just had, yeah. And I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And then I said, you know what? You did the best you could do. And yeah, I mean,
life is life. You know, sometimes it's not a perfect situation. You know, sometimes it just, you know, it's like that cacophony moment. You know, I love fusion jazz. And part of it is like we can go into this kind of disharmony or cacophony and come back to the melody. And it's just kind of like you live in the present tense. You live in that flow state, And I love that as an artist, I could sit down and write the bars, but I really like doing free form, kind of just, you know, ad hoc in the moment, stream of consciousness. Because what you do is you start to trust yourself and you don't overthink it. And a lot of times when I check my recordings, the stuff I really planned out never really matches the stuff that I actually let go freeform. And I'm like, wow. It's like I'm better at just letting myself go than actually trying to plan it, because when I plan it, it doesn't work right. So I'm like, okay,
where do I hear your music?
Oh, it's all over the it's Phantom Electric Ghost. I'm on multiple platforms. It's very disturbing. But I think this people try to be yourself. My mantra is like, once you learn to accept yourself and just, you know, put it out there, then the law of attraction, you get opportunities. And that's when my life has been. And it seems like you're trying to teach people to learn how to communicate, which I think is really powerful. And I do want to recommend again, people to check out your website, lisashields.com, because it's like communication and connection and relationships, it's part of life. You can't just live as an island. You have to deal with other people. And so the skills you're teaching are very important. And I think it's well worth people checking out for their own life, how to connect with other people, because you don't want to just be an island.
Well, and you don't have to be. You know, I think so many people, I don't care how many times you've been hurt or disappointed, let down by men, how many awful relationships you've seen around you. There are good men out there. I mean, here's a beautiful example. And you don't need to miss out on this beautiful experience of love and partnership. It's out there if you know how to find it. And that's what I've been showing women how to do for over two decades, Santa.
Well, I thank you again for being a guest on the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. It always goes by, the hour goes by quicker than we ever imagined, but again, we're live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, and we're going to be on all the major podcast platforms that you can watch or listen to, and your audience will have all that tomorrow. We'll give you a landing page. But yeah, thank you again for being on the podcast. We appreciate every guest that comes on the show, and hope you have a great night.
Thank you.